Blog Talk Radio.
Do you believe that America has become too politically correct? Von Wiehunt speaks truth to power. Do you see the coming of our political and economic demise? Von Wiehunt speaks bluntly about the need to correct America's course quickly. And now, broadcasting from the Eagle's Nest, a man who makes no excuses for putting America first. Here's your host, Von Wiehunt the Barbarian.
America, welcome to an epic episode number 89 tonight, and our theme is Who Killed Lady Diana. We will have the famous author Stephen Ubaney coming on later in the show. This is our pirate radio show, broadcasting from my mountain stronghold here in Arizona, nationwide and all over the world. It's our pirate radio show. We will take calls after the author calls in on the VIP line. There will be a Legion show as well. We'll have a lot of fun tonight. Very informative. And never forget, my friends, I say each week on the radio that we are a world at war. It's the Barbarian, Von Wiehunt. And as Obi-Wan Kenobi once said, the Force is strong with this one. Oh, yes. Well, good evening to everybody and to the underground in America. This is Colonel Hogan, at times your senior POW officer with the news of the day. And by God, we will tell it in Stalag 13 America, whether they like it or not, as we are behind enemy lines. As this show has always spoken truth to entrenched power. The trucker protests against the Canadian government manufactured COVID mandates and the corrupt globalist snake Trudeau continues in the streets of Ottawa and elsewhere in the country, and rightfully so. The truth is like a lion. The truth is out there somewhere. You don't have to defend it. Let it loose so it can run wild. And truth, like a lion, will always defend itself every time. Just now, in a world of propaganda and intrigue, the truth is always a conspiracy. Here's a rhetorical question for you, America. Why even invade a country when you can just buy its institutions or its presidency, turn its women against its own men, make transvestites and queers out of its children, sell the wealth generated by its labor to foreign investors, and then introduce a foreign proxy army of, quote, new immigrants, and market them as, quote, refugees of diversity, looking for freedom to finish it all off. Well, in the world of politics and foreign policy, there is the word checkmate. Now, scholars tell us that the word checkmate comes from ancient Persia, and it means the king is dead. So checkmate will be our password going forward this entire year. It was Thomas Jefferson, back in the days of our revolutionary fathers, 1776, he said, to beware of the banks, that they rule by fiat currency, by interest, and by deflation, and that one day they will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent that their fathers conquered. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and the central banks and restored to the people. This is what we're seeing, is what the elite want our whole country to turn into. This is why we see corrupt people promoted so much in government and corporate America, to make our society more feral, like them. And then they feel they can control us more. The Bolsheviks took over Russia back in 1917. The Bolsheviks are still with us today in 2022. They are pure satanic evil personified on planet Earth. Demons of the flesh. We hope a red wave is coming. And the globo homo rhinos are doing everything they can to keep America last. And to keep America first, grassroots type of candidates out of the primaries and out of the election mix. Know that to be true. A wise man once said that life is like a train station. People come and go all the time. But the ones that wait for the train with you are the ones that are worth keeping. Well, you've reached the radio octagon, the rogue and infamous and legendary Von Wiehunt Show. And tonight's VIP guest is the famous author Stephen Biobaney, talking about the royal plot to murder Lady Diana and her infamous demise. The author has intel and deep sources that shed much light on this tragic story, which happened many years ago. But like any good murder story, it has links to today's royal cabal and other forms of treachery that we see in the fake news perpetrated by many international rogue intelligence agencies around the world. And just like the JFK cover-up, this radio show is for the history books. We're glad you're tuning in tonight on Blog Talk Radio. You'll be glad you did, America, where you will learn more about your world. Yes. These can be apocalyptic times to many. As it states in the good book, The Red Horse, and when he had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, come and see. And there went out another horse that was red. And power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another. And there was given unto him a great sword. From John the Apostle, Revelation 6:3-4. Most Americans don't know that Russia has a dead man's hand doomsday machine. Only my listeners know on the Von Wiegen Show, maybe intel agencies. It goes like this. If our CIA or intelligence services assassinate or first strike or blow up the Russian leaders in any shape, form, or fashion, that the Russians have already programmed their missiles to launch and to attack America. Period. Dot. Decimal point. That if their leaders were taken out by any first strike by Biden or any smartasses up there in Washington, D.C. that think, and every now and then they talk about a first strike, they are insane. They are warmongers, and they are putting the nation in serious. Russia also, don't forget, has the nuclear Trident submarine bomb that can cause tsunamis to our coastal cities. Can go 20 to 50 miles inland with water. There's nothing more devastating than nature when it's unleashed. So watch out for those tsunamis on the Pacific side and the Atlantic side. Because in a real nuclear war, you're not just going to see nuclear annihilation of American cities. You would see tsunamis on each coast. And other things that maybe we don't even know about yet. Well, the truckers, the patriots up there in Canada, mean business. They're not leaving. There's no reason to. What one Canadian patriot said online tonight in the Underground, he wrote this, his quote, Justin Trudeau must be removed from power in Canada. Civil war is building. The fire exits are blocked by totalitarians like Trudeau. Solutions are simple but hard to master. The current organizational structure of Canada right now is communist. There can be no peace or freedom in Canada while Trudeau is in power and overlording his mandate to the people. The black-faced tyrant, he said, must be overthrown. Well, you know how he feels, Canada, and there are millions like him. I always said, if you heard my show for years, what do I always tell you? This is proof positive of it, that these leftists, globalists, governments always overplay their hand. They always think they've hoodwinked you, that they've snowed you, that they're smarter than you, and you're just going to sit there in the corner and take it, right? That's what they think. Well, this is a prime example. Trudeau overplayed his hand. The Canadian corrupt politicians overplayed their hand. And now they've got a big, big problem. Thousands of truckers are not leaving until real reform is made, until all mandates are lifted, until freedom is restored and communism and Trudeau are turned on their head. Many of the truckers say that they will not leave until Trudeau is forced from power. Real regime change. Not in North Korea or China, but Canada. Who would have thought? Who would have thought any of this was happening or was going to happen 6 months ago? What have I told you? These government dictators overplay their hand in our country and elsewhere. And they wonder why people went into the Capitol on January 6th. They wonder why there's truckers in Canada that are not leaving. People want freedom and liberty. That is what this show is about. You do not want it through government tyranny or games or false flag attacks or more of their brother wars or more of their foreign entanglements or our brothers come back in black zipped body bags and nothing is gained and our government treasure is spent. Third world hell holes all over the world. You know it, and I know it. Well, Canada, I know you are a sleeping giant that is wide awake tonight. And this is precisely what Trudeau is afraid of. Your unified strength. Stand fast. Stand true. Remember, we do what we do for our children, family, and longtime friends. You have many supporters in Patriot America. We are all over the landscape and behind every blade of grass and rock and mountain and deeply camouflaged. Godspeed. Whatever has been held together for a long time has to divide. And whatever has been divided for a long time must come together. This is ancient prophecy. Do you believe that America will balkanize at some point? And that is our trajectory in the future for this nation? I don't think we're going to be able to hold it together. But there is room, of course, for things to happen. There will be different regions in America. I think at some point this nation will be decentralized, much like the Soviet Union when it fell in 1991. Well, the real beta test going on in America right now is in Chicago, in New York, and they want the gangs to take over the streets. They want civil war to break out and thugs to hunt people in the streets. I told you before that political elites are satanic. They're demonic. They want you to kill each other. We don't want that. We want peace in our land. But they want war. Any way they can get it. They want that control back. They want to be able to roll back your freedoms. Usher in martial law or the UN armies at some point. The ancient Hopi Indians in northern Arizona have many prophecies about this. And they say that the agents of the red communist symbol are already in America. So the Hopi Indians of the mountains in Arizona and Colorado and up there over the border in Utah, they say the enemy is already here. This is what their tribal elders say. And right now they are in place and they are just waiting for a sign for their violent rampage. Very interesting. It's very interesting what other people have to say about our times, our life and times in America. Well, is it a version of Operation Valkyrie in the Canadian government quarter yet? In a parallel universe, astrophysicists tell us, time and time again with quantum mechanics, other physical theories, that these historical sequences are happening all over the known universe. We hope that the Canadian Patriot truckers and their supporters are safe tonight amid all the Trudeau-manufactured chaos. If you are referring to the multiverse, then physicists tell us that all possible outcomes are at every instance in the cosmos, and all paths play out in every parallel universe. So which path we are personally on as individuals will be very important to us as individuals in our life experience and our trajectory. You want to pray for the nation, pray for our patriot friends all over the world, and pray to be on the path of good. For there is good and evil in the world. We welcome you to our Fireside Chat America every Thursday night. 8 to 10 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Broadcast live from Arizona, from Valhalla Studios. Where we will talk about the cutting-edge news of the day. And this show is where history comes alive. We are living in idiocracy more and more, America, like the movie. You ever see that movie, Idiocracy? Well, just know that when tyranny becomes law, as in Trudeau's Canada, or Nancy Pelosi's America, the K, that resistance to it, in many cases, becomes your absolute duty. Now, I'll take the case of Ivermectin and the COVID strain and the new variants and all that. Ivermectin works in Mexico and just about every other country in the world, but our elites tell us it will not work in the United States. Isn't that amazing? Voter ID is used all over the world, but they tell us, the elites tell us, that if it's ever applied in America, and it will not work, and it will become, drumroll please, their famous Democrat word, it will become racist, right? They also tell us, elites, Biden, Pelosi, the globalists, that defending Ukraine's border is very noble, very good, very moral. We have a line in the sand against mighty Russia and Vladimir Putin drinking his vodka shots in the Kremlin. But also they tell us that defending the U.S. border is very, very bad. Should never be attempted. Should never be done. You compound that with our terrible, terrible media, disingenuous, incompetent at best, their own agenda, their own axe to grind. Now, this level of lying, blatant lying in your face is what we see in our media and government every day. And then they have the nerve and gall to wonder, just to wonder, why none of us trust any of them. Isn't that amazing? They have the nerve to wonder why we're not believing their BS, America. Well, in the final analysis, if you think about it long and hard enough, as I have, there are only two possible teams, us and the enemy. There's no middle ground. Choose wisely going forward. It's a battle right now between the elites and the middle class. The elites might be more powerful in terms of money and position and grandeur, etc., but I'll put all my money on the middle class to win this battle. The Democrats want to hold gun manufacturers, for example, responsible 100% for the guns they sell. But they don't want to hold big pharma companies responsible for the jabs and the drugs they sell, which have, in many scientists' point of view, in journals, have killed Americans. So what does that tell you, America? Is big pharma good and gun companies bad? Well, that's what the media says. I will be blunt as the radio barbarian. You will always make up your own mind, America. I would have it no other way. Now, one man said this, that Trump is not our future. Only you are the future. We wish Trump well. He did a lot of good things, but he's out of the Oval Office. There does come a point in time where politically and we need to move on as a party, move forward. We always wish Trump well. I liked 2016 Trump the best when he was the bull in the China shop. The young, up-and-coming politician in D.C., but don't forget, at the end of the day, he's still a politician, and he was learning, not on-the-job training. Well, again tonight, stay tuned, folks. Put your crash helmet on. strap in. We've got the world-famous author, Stephen Ubaney, with his great book, Who Murdered Diana? He'll be our VIP guest tonight. We'll get him on shortly about the royal intrigue surrounding that topic. And when he speaks, he takes the platform on the radio octagon, I, as you all, need to be listening intently to his words of wisdom and intel. It's going to be a great show. Well, I got to say this, too, during my monologue. Be very wary of people that are telling you that they're simulating attacks on our country or people, because the weird thing is these attacks, over time, tend to happen. I remember before 9/11. My memory is like a steel trap. It's very good. And they have these guys on TV and the news, even on the internet, talking about the simulation of 9/11. They said, what if planes flew into the World Trade Center? About a year or two before, I heard this a couple of times. I went, why are we even talking about that? Why is that an issue? Well, the simulation of a global financial cyber attack on America and the world is what the elites have kept talking about the last year or two. So that tells me that it will more than likely happen when you least expect it. You're going to wake up one morning, they'll tell you that Tokyo Exchange has crashed, London has crashed, Frankfurt, Germany has crashed, New York is about to crash. And that is the fastest way for them to usher in a new world order, a global new financial system of digital currency that these governments are feverishly working on, by the way. But I've heard this again and again and again on YouTube and elsewhere. I'm just curious if you all have. These simulated attacks on America and our financial position and systems, organization, our financial matrix, if you will. Very interesting. Well, you all heard about Bill Cooper back in the day. Great guy, was a government intel officer. Actually, he was murdered up in northern Arizona, a few hours away from where Valhalla Studios is. But he said that this all started way back before World War II, but really it culminated with the JFK assassination, because JFK was a threat to the New World Order. Now, the globalists are rushing us towards their tyrannical endgame. We all know they want depopulation. This is nothing new. They've been talking about this stuff since I was a kid for decades, or a few decades. The real U.S. government, this coup they kept talking about on January the 6th, is all the media's big lie. That's the real big lie. The tentacles of this go much deeper. They want you to stay in the shallow water and not dig, not research anything. But 1963, when JFK was bumped off in Dallas and Dealey Plaza and assassinated, that was the real coup. And that coup persists to this day upon the American people as they push towards what George Orwell long ago warned us of. Who controls the past controls the future, Orwell said. Who controls the present controls the past. In a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. War is peace, Orwell said. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. The most effective way to destroy people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of their history. George Orwell, great author. Well, we have a lot to talk about. We have a big show. Studio has advised me that Stephen Ubaney is in our green room in the VIP section waiting to come on. We'll start the Von Wien show. We come back, we'll have the author, Stephen Ubaney, on with his great book, Who Murdered Diana. We're glad you're here tonight. Tell your friends to gather around the radio and to tune in. They don't want to miss a word of our VIP guest. It's right to our VIP guest, Mr. Stephen Ubaney from New York. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, it's great to be back for a record-breaking third time. Is there a record?
Yes.
It is.
So glad to have you
on
board.
So I can break it. Great to be back on your show, but how am I going to follow George Orwell? You set me up, man.
Well, I was thinking about authors, and I had to do some research on George Orwell, and I thought he'd be a good tie-in to our topic tonight. But I know, like, you can beat him and you can trump him, pun intended.
You said Trump. Look at that.
You've got the city and the intel on Lady Di that George Orwell does not have, you know. You got the real intel.
I get so interested in listening to your show. Hell, I forgot I was on. You know, it's like, wow, this is a great show.
Thank you.
The same media that was lying to us then, that continues to lie to us, was lying to us with the Princess Diana thing, which is one of the reasons why I have to be self-published. Why? Because the major publishing companies are owned by the same media companies who control the television stuff and what they're saying, and they don't want the truth out. No one would touch my books. So I had to self-publish and start my own publishing company just to bring these books to you, because I believe the truth will set you free. You know, I've said for years, truth might hurt, but it should never be hidden, to make sure that it never will be. So that's what makes my mind tick. That's where I hang my hat. So the title of the book is Who Murdered Diana? Short book, 200 pages. I get to the point, and you'll love it. In the end, it fulfills the title. It'll tell you exactly who murdered Diana. I gather everybody through the suspects, run them through the elements of a crime, what it means an opportunity, and in the end, the evidence spits out who did it and how they did it. And it has very little to do with me. I'm kind of like the sculptor, Vaughn, who just, you know, I sculpt something and I say to myself, you know, that was always there. I just removed the pieces around it, you know?
Right.
Under that.
Love that.
You're right. So,
and you uncover the truth.
I'm very well plugged into people who work on both sides of the law with equal skill. So if one side can't give me the answers that I want, certainly the other side can. And my book, this is an interesting book because my book was already written. It was already done. I did a stupid thing, which I do from time to time. I do stupid things, and I ended up on Facebook, and I happened to – no, it wasn't Facebook. I'm sorry. It was another social media platform. It wasn't Facebook. And I made a comment, my next book is going to be on Princess Diana. So this person, using an alias, contacts me and says, I live in a little village outside of Paris. My mother's been investigating this for years. She just passed. You want this information? And I'm thinking, oh, God, because I know what this meant. I'm going to have to rewrite my entire manuscript. I was done, you know. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, bring it on. So I did this thing, and it's loaded with pictures and information that nobody has. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is really good. It's like 200 and some odd pages, maybe more. And I'm going through this, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is really interesting. This is good stuff, you know? So I go back to this popular social media outlet that I won't name, and I try and contact this person to let them know that I received their packet. They're gone. They're off the platform. User disappeared. I'm like, ask myself two questions. Why have they disappeared? Why did they send it to me? And is this stuff for real? So I'm going through this, and one of the things that they pointed out, it's all in my book. All right, I've got stuff in my book that nobody's ever seen before, and I wanted to explain how the book came about before I dig into it. One of the things that is in my book that is rare, that I don't know if it was anybody else's book, that I didn't know before, they pointed out that Princess Diana was using a body double. I didn't know this.
I didn't either.
Getting so many death threats. She was using a body double, and the woman's name is Sue, and I'm not going to give you her last name. They gave it to me. I'm not going to repeat it. And some of the pictures that were taken with Dodie on the boat in the month first, you know, leading up to her untimely demise were not her. And here these pictures are being vended to tabloids and certain places around the world for all ungodly sums of money, and they're not her. And if you look really close, you have the aha moment where, oh, my God, it's really not her. Pictures I had to put in the book, very interesting stuff. So I have to start from the beginning on this because I'm hopscotching around here. Very interesting book, and what piqued my interest in this was there's a lot of great researchers that came before me. I'm the only American investigator in this, to my knowledge. Everybody else has been, you know, in the European bloc, and there's been some fabulous researchers. And the problem is most of them have a confirmation bias. Most of them are looking at it through the lens of the European thing of the royal family. So I look at the evidence a little bit differently. I'm not obsessed with the royal family. I don't care about the royal family. I live in America. Okay, so I'm looking at this information with a jaundiced eye, and I'm saying, okay, let's run all of these suspects through motive, means, and opportunity. So this is where I started to come in. I never believed the story that we were told. And from a marketing point of view, the more times you have to tell the story, the worse the story is. Now, I live in New York State, unfortunately, and I can't begin to tell you the amount of taxpayer-funded money that is being squandered on these vaccine commercials. Get this vaccine, get that vaccine, this, that, and the other thing. And I have to ask myself, if the product is that good, why do they have to push it so hard? You have to ask, right? Same thing with the Princess Diana. You have to ask. If they have to force this so hard, is it real? You have to ask the question. So I'm the only American investigator who's dug into the stories, and I went all the way back to, boy, to the point where about 1327 with Edward III, and I realized that Princess Diana and Prince Charles were cousins. They were cousins, which is weird. It's kind of weird. They wanted to keep the royal bloodline, and this has happened throughout history. Roosevelt married his cousin. Eleanor was a cousin. She was born to Roosevelt, married to Roosevelt, died to Roosevelt. Woman never changed her monogram in her entire life. This happens through history. You remember Gone with the Wind. The Wilkes always married their cousins. They hit something special. They wanted to keep the bloodline going. So a little misconception about Princess Diana is that she was a commoner, not even close. She was a Spencer. I mean, the Spencers were her. I mean, her father was the 8th Earl of Spencer. I mean, this is generations of careful breeding and royalty.
Right.
It can be argued that Princess Diana's bloodline is, it can be argued that it's more royal than Prince Charles.
Interesting
backdrop there. Yeah, it really is, isn't it? So comes into the public eye doing menial jobs. She's working, helping out at the kindergarten. She was doing miscellaneous different tasks. Indeed, she was cleaning house and all kinds of things that common people like us would do. She's nowhere near a commoner. What happened is she had a pretty terrible childhood. She was she was born on July 1st, 1661. Lots of kids in the family, and they go through this divorce. The parents go through a divorce, and she comes into the world unwanted, and this haunts her whole life, which is why she ripped apart so badly with this marriage. Of course, the royal families always want boys. They want to keep the bloodline going. So they had lost an infant son the year before Diana was born. So they were hoping for a boy. So here comes Princess Diana, who doesn't look anything like a boy. they were really disappointed that she was a girl. So she was unwanted from day one. And she grew up with that being thrown in her face, which is borderline child abuse, actually. I can't imagine.
Yeah, it really is. It's mental abuse.
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody would do that to a child. So,
yeah, it's psychological trauma.
It's brutal. Why would anybody do that? So
terrible. I agree.
She has many sisters, and a little fact that gets lost in the cracks of history is that Diana was all of the Spencer girls were all bred for royal breeding stock. They were all virgins. They were all highly, they went to finishing school. They were highly mannered. They were all royal breeding stock. And the Spencers, the queen and the royal family in England had known the Spencers for generations. These were not strangers to each other. I mean, there's only so much royalty in England. You know, I mean, England is a very old, very wealthy, and kind of a very small country in the scale of some of the other countries. So there's only so much royalty, and they kind of knew each other. So Prince Charles was dating Diana's sister, Sarah. And that was trucking along lovingly until either someone took her out of context or she said something to the media that she shouldn't have said, and which was non-flattering to Charles, and they put a royal end to that quickly. I think the queen got involved. So here's Prince Charles, now 32, and, you know, the royal family is kind of pressuring him, hey, look, you need to sire some offspring to keep the crown going. So they really wanted to do two boys, and, of course, they got them. So. That was the catalyst for the queen picking Diana as the future queen, as it were. And Charles was half-heartedly in the marriage. You know, he had been tiptoeing around with a woman named Camilla Bowles, who was married to a man named Andrew Parker Bowles. Lots and lots of alphabets and names here. Okay, I promise the book is not boring, but I have to give you the backdrop so I can get to the other stuff.
Oh, sure.
He was, they were tiptoeing around since 1971, so this had a hell of a jump before Diana came into the fold. So she's, I mean, he's 32. She's 20 when they get married.
Mm-hmm.
And she is perfect reading stock. She was raised the right way. She was a virgin. She was very, very sweet. The queen loved her. Of course, the queen had known her since she was in diapers. And she's not in diapers anymore. So, I mean, there wasn't any tremendous
mm-hmm.
introduction going on here. They all knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
So the queen did everything possible to break up Prince Charles and Camilla Bowles. She got involved
mm-hmm.
and she shipped him off to military school and then shipped him off to be in the military and sent him off to sea, hoping that things would cool off. And, of course, they didn't. So
mm-hmm.
the deck was stacked very much against Princess Diana. She gets into this relationship with this man, and for the first time, she wants it. The psychological. It goes back to this little teeny girl who was unwanted. So she's psychologically and emotionally invested in this. And you have to feel sorry
mm-hmm.
for her. It's really tough, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here she is. You know, I mean, she's, you know, a naive girl. Yeah, she was 20. And if she was Amish, she probably would have been a grandmother at 20. But you know what? She wasn't. So here she is probably mentally 12, you know, being thrust in this situation
mm-hmm.
and having a tough time coping with everything. So they start to date. They get married. Of course, I think they ended up meeting in November of 77. And the queen loved her and selected her for, as I said before, for the future queen. And Charles is still in love with this other woman. So he's involved in this marriage, but he's not really invested in the marriage. His interests are elsewhere. So there's a lot of
mm-hmm.
royal crock-slopping going on. Very bizarre situation. Of course, we didn't know any of this until long, long afterwards, because the royal family is very good at keeping up appearances. So
mm-hmm.
they get married, St. Paul's Cathedral, 3,500 guests. Tremendous ceremony. You remember it? Did you watch it?
I actually did. It was, broadcast all over the world. What an extravagant pomp and ceremony affair, right?
It was
incredible.
Really something.
Yeah, I saw it. Mm-hmm.
50 countries, 750 million people. Here she is
mm-hmm.
showing. Shows up with a $18,000 white taffeta gown. Well, of course, they don't have dollars on them. They're in a different monetary system. But, you know, a 25-foot train. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
49
million. It was like
million.
A fairy tale. Yeah, it was like, Steve, a fairy tale wedding, you know, broadcast all over the world. Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like straight out of a Disney movie. I mean, here's this, you know, this beautiful princess doing the Snow White wave and, you know, the long train. And to us, on the outside looking in, everything was fantastic. Oh, wow, look at the spectacle. This is great. Not
mm-hmm.
so great on the inside. She was having all kinds of problems before the wedding. She caught Charles involved elsewhere, I guess is the best way to put it. She suffered from bulimia and insomnia and severe depression. She tried to call off the wedding. You know, this was really, it was really a bad situation. Very, very bad situation. And, the royal family did what they did best, really. They kept up appearances. They only have a couple jobs, and they're weird jobs. They act weird and stay away from people. I think that's their number one job. Their number one concern is having boys to continue the monarchy. And they appear ceremoniously and they act as dignitaries. That's what they do. And they pull it off perfectly with this. So, of course, here come the babies, you know. William was born in 1982. He was a Duke of Cambridge. This time when Prince Harry came along in September of 84, became the Duke of Sussex. Both pretty cool kids. You know, I mean, they grew up, I think, to be pretty level-headed people. At least that's the way it looks on the outside of the castle. You know how it is. But after the first boy was born, Diana started having an affair with an instructor, her horseback riding instructor, James Hewitt. And she knows the marriage is over.
Lucky guy.
They're together to keep up appearances, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to tell you that to tell you this. Here's where the bad blood comes in. The name of the book is Who Murdered Diana? Now the bad blood is starting to form. They split. And the royal family and the tabloids, I mean, the tabloids are having a blast with this. If you weren't alive on planet Earth at this time, this is a time where there was certainly no internet. And there was no 24-hour media. What you saw in tabloids was a real big deal. And Prince Charles and Diana were going at each other pretty hot and heavy with news articles and interviews, and England is ripping itself apart. People are taking sides. And I don't care what kind of government you have. It doesn't matter what kind of government you have, if it's socialist or capitalist or communist. You want complacent people. You don't want uprisings because they're a pain to deal with. So here's the royal family in a situation where, wow, this is really out of hand, and we're really close to losing control of this. This is a bad situation to have. So the queen steps in and says, you go your way, you go your way, and this is over. So they file for divorce. A lot of bad blood within the royal family. I'll add the royal family to the first, they're the first suspect that goes into the book. Okay. And like I said, all of these, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all of these 6 suspects are gathered for specific reasons and run through the elements of the crime, motive, means, and opportunity. And in 200 short pages, you'll know exactly who did it. So Diana's going her own way, and she has a series of love affairs with different guys. She's still suffering, this little girl inside of her is still suffering from what she went through during those formative years. It's hard to shake because in her mind, she's still unwanted. All she ever wanted in her entire life was someone to love her the way she loved mankind. And she's having a hell of a time doing it. You really have to feel sorry for her. Lots of reasons. So I won't go into the love affairs and the results or what happened, but leading up to this, she meets, she ends up with one guy who she really loves, and it's his name is Hazmat Khan. And Hazmat Khan is a Pakistani cardiologist, and she's doing an event in a hospital, and she meets the guy. And it wasn't long before they started a terrific affair that lasted 2 years. She had to break it off. Again, she couldn't find love, or love was not allowed to find Princess Diana. She, this lovelorn princess, she meets this guy who she thinks is fantastic. She meets his family. And she says, look, I want to change my life. I want to get married and move on. He can't take the, he's a cardiologist. He knows how the press dogs her. You know, she had a cat and mouse thing with the press. She knew that she could snap her fingers and get the press anywhere she wanted it on her terms, which is great for her cause. But the double-edged sword is he can't shut it off. And Hazmat Khan was not the sort of guy who was going to put up with this media attention all the time. So he said, look, I can't do this. I'm a private guy. I like my privacy. I like my practice. I'm a doctor. I can't be a celebrity, and I don't want this life. They had to split. It was the first real, serious relationship that she had. So right on the heels of that split, she reconnects with an old friend of hers, Dodi Al-Fayed, who was her boyfriend at the time that she was murdered. And yes, I said she was murdered. We'll get into that in a minute. Again, England's only so big. So they know each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mohammed Al-Fayed owned a slew of investments in England. He owned the Fulham Football Club. He owned Harrods, major department store. And he owned a couple other things. And he had been friends of Diana's father for their whole lives. These people all know each other. And when he died, Diana's father, he used to look in on the family to make sure they didn't need anything, make sure they were okay. He actually went on to employ a couple of family members. So Diana and Dodi ended up meeting each other back in the 80s. These people knew each other well. So Dodi Al-Fayed is kind of a global playboy, film producer of Breaking Glass, Chariots of Fire, FX 1 and 2, Hook, Scarlet Letter, and numerous other hits. He's his father's right-hand man at the Ritz, which is a hotel in Paris that his father, Mohammed Al-Fayed, also owns. And he basically flies around the world and plays with his girls and plays with his toys and does whatever he wants until Princess Diana comes along. So here comes this love affair that is cast everywhere, on every channel, on every tabloid, everywhere. And some people say that she wasn't in love with Dodi, that she was just trying to get Hazmi Khan to commit because they didn't really broke up that long. Some people claim the other way. I don't care. It happened in history, so I'm reporting it. So here's this interesting mix of people. Their relationship allegedly started on July 31st of 1997. They had a relationship for exactly 4 weeks. Which is weird because you think by all the reporting it would be longer. It wasn't. It was 4 weeks.
Right.
And she was 36. Dodi was 41. And they seem to be very happy with each other. And I know that there's rumors out there that Diana was pregnant and it was Dodi's child or whatnot. It's a red herring. It's planted there to get people to spin their mental gears out of control. And I connect this to other things that I found. The planted drug syringes that were in Elvis Presley's upstairs with no needle marks on them. These people are good at what they do. They plant things to spin you away. That's a red herring, all right? And they said that she had a baby bump and this and that, and it was Dodi's kid. I don't know if she was pregnant or not. I don't care. All I do know is that if she was pregnant with Dodi's kid and she had a baby bump, it would have been impossible after 4 weeks to have a baby bump. That child would be about the size of a poppy seed or an apple seed. It was impossible. She might have been pregnant with something else, but that baby bump wasn't showing from Dodi's kid, that's for sure. So she runs into a situation where she's divorced. Kids are growing up. You know, she's now 36, and she's trying to reinvent herself. There's already bad blood within the royal family against her.
Right.
And to the point where she writes a letter saying that if something happens to me, it'll be MI6. And she gives it to her attorney. And she said she's going to die in a car accident, which is really kind of prophetic, because I'll come to that in a second, but there was so much bad blood, this letter was necessary to be written. So we go along the path, she's trying to reinvent herself, and she's marrying herself to her causes. her first cause was an AIDS epidemic. And she just is on the wrong side of everything here. She's really falling all over herself, trying to reinvent herself, and she ended up making another murder suspect, the pharmaceutical industry, which is another one that is screened out during the book, and here's why. At the time, AIDS is an illness that there's a lot unknown about it. You weren't supposed to touch AIDS patients. You weren't supposed to be around them. They didn't know how communicable this was. And here she is. And, of course, they're in trying to come up with a vaccine that they can sell around the world to all these governments for they're trying to do at the time. And here she is running around holding babies with AIDS, having human contact with people with AIDS, and basically removing the fear of AIDS at a time where it's just not done. I mean, this is just absolutely out of your mind. Why would you do this, okay? And if you want to sell a vaccine around the world, you need fear as a tremendous motivator. Sound familiar, Vaughn? So we get to the point where the pharmaceutical industry has billions of dollars on the line, and she is kind of removing the catalyst. She's clouding the market for this vaccine. So this ends up, the pharmaceutical industry is not happy with her whatever, and that ends up being a second murder suspect. Did they have her killed because she was in the way of their vaccine and their profits? Very interesting thing to investigate. The next one,
absolutely.
And her next cause is the international campaign to ban landmines. She just could not believe that long after these warring countries are done with their wars, that all of these landmines are left in the ground and people are wandering on them and getting blown up long after these conflicts have gone.
Yeah, I remember
so she
that.
Started, wasn't that fantastic? You remember that?
I do remember that. Yeah, that was a great little project of hers. And she's right. You know, when these raging wars stop, there's millions of landmines still over all around the world, you know, just waiting for someone to step on it. You know, I mean, it's kind of scary, but she did at least one thing I liked about that, focusing the spotlight on that. And there was a movement to remove those, which did save lives.
There was, absolutely. She, in July of 96, she began her global tour, I guess. Like I said, she could manipulate the media tremendously. And she's going around the world raising, raising awareness for this. And she already had, the second meeting was in June of 1997 in Ottawa, where she already had 100 countries signed up on this international landmine ban. She's going to get all the countries involved to ban these things and to stop, to snap to and stop doing this. And it's a lofty thing. And she really took it seriously.
It is.
So she's in Angola in July of 1996. The world media meets her, and she's being photographed with these people who are missing arms and legs and this and that and the other thing. And she was already receiving death threats. She was already receiving death threats.
Yeah.
She knew she was in great danger. There was a guy named Alan McGregor, and I tried so hard to interview this guy. He was her bodyguard when she traveled abroad. And there are numerous articles, $100 million dollars in their money, to the rebels in Angola so they'd stop trying to take her hostage and stop attacking her. There's basically a ransom. She's already receiving
calls. Yeah.
She's stepping in major, major toes. So she said, "The hell with it, I'm going anyway," which is either incredibly brave or incredibly stupid. I don't know which. I wouldn't have done it. She was Princess Diana.
No way.
She could do what she wanted. So
from
July of 96, she goes right into Bosnia. August 18th. It's 13 days before her murder, actually. She is a three-day trip, and she's in Bosnia doing the same thing. And she's out there promoting this. And she is pissing people off like you would not believe. Because, you know, we have to come to the realization of the fact that there are bad people in this world. The majority of us are not, okay?
Right.
But there are countries in this world whose entire gross national product is made from the sale of arms, be it legally or illegally, including landmines and guns and all kinds of things, probably all the way up to the aircraft carriers. And when you start talking about a landmine ban, and there were rumors that behind that was going to be a small arms ban, you're screwing with the global balance economically of the world. And this just wasn't going to happen.
Yes, you are.
So on August 18th, you know, I mean, she's in Bosnia, and again, she's got the media there, and 13 days later, she was gone. 13 days later. So, lot going on here. She had three warnings. And this is where people think that the royal family was involved in her murder. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, the royal family was the first people I took out of the investigation. First time.
Okay.
They were the first people. And here's why. Okay. Shortly after the Angola trip, there's a British Prime Minister, Earl Howe, puts in a newspaper that Diana is not being helpful or realistic and she's a loose cannon, trying to warn her off, trying to get her to knock it off. The second time, again, was newspaper. It was a member of parliament, Peter Vigors, and his quote, and I have the quote here, Diana's efforts don't add much to the sum of human knowledge. And the quote was a little longer than that, but you get the gist. They're trying to discourage her, ward her off. The third one was in February of 97, and it was by phone. And this is documented in their investigation, the pageant report on page 109, where the British Armed Forces Minister, Nicholas Soames, calls her at Kensington Palace, tells her, don't meddle in things, this is a quote, don't meddle in things that you don't know anything about because accidents can happen.
Wow.
So, look at it. If MI6 and MI5 want you dead, you're going to be dead in about 30 seconds. There are real-life James Bonds in this world, okay? 007 is just not for the movies, folks. They really exist, all right? Anybody who's trying to warn you off is not trying to kill you. If MI6 wants you done, you're just done. That's it. She wasn't smart enough to figure out your own country is trying to save you. They're trying to warn you off. For some reason, she got this twisted around in her head, and this is why she penned the letter I mentioned earlier, that people inside Britain, MI6 or MI5, are going to kill me and this and that and the other thing. The royal family, as I mentioned their jobs earlier, they had everything to lose and not one little thing to gain by trifling with the murder of Princess Diana. They're not going to lose control of the country. They're not going to have this public uprising. They're not going to deal with it. The greatest thing that the royal family was hoping for is that she met somebody else and just went away and stopped being a pain. I'm sure they weren't thrilled with her. There was a lot of bad blood in the castle. But they're not going to go after Princess Diana. And here's why. They're obsessed with keeping the monarchy going. 500 years from now, when their children and their children's children and so on are moving on with the monarchy, very few people are going to be talking about Princess Diana. It's a big thing
That's
now.
That's right.
But it's coming up on 25 years. Okay, if people who are born right now, they're going to know about her, but they're not going to know a bunch about her. And it's going to continue to fade on and on. They're not going to put in jeopardy the monarchy to trifle with this scorned divorcee. It's just not going to happen. But again, this is where I'm different. I'm an American investigator. I'm not obsessed with the royal family. For me, they're just someone to be analyzed. So they were the first people that I removed as the suspects in this book. And in the book, I explain why. So, you know, we've been talking about this book.
Wow.
I probably should tell people how to get the book, right?
Yeah, I was about to say, before we get to that, I have a question for you from the audience. Somebody emailed me earlier before the show. They're probably listening now. They were from Gab, and they believe that, and I wanted to bounce this off of you since you have a lot of intel, that Lady Di, they believe, faked her own death as part of some royal globalist intrigue kind of situation. What's your take on that, that she's really alive? Now, I know it sounds crazy, but people actually think that Lady Di is talking to President Trump at Mar-a-Lago, that she faked her death. It was all part of, you know, her plan or the royal plan. I mean, you've heard of people say that, you know, she is talking to, you know, John F. Kennedy Jr., who also never died. And this is a lot of Q stuff and Q fantasy in the political realms that people are talking about. Every now and then I pick up on it on Gab or the Internet or YouTube or elsewhere. But what's your professional take as the author of these people that say that Diana is alive and she faked her own death for whatever reason?
You know, I would love to be able to find evidence for that. But I can't write on assumption. You know what I mean? Basically, the center of all, and I hate this term. I'm going to use it. Ready? Here we go. Conspiracy theory.
I'm ready.
I hate that term.
Yes.
I hate it. Okay?
Yes.
That should be taken right out of our vernacular. But I'm going to use it because that's what people understand. So when conspiracy theorists are right, what the hell do you call them then? Anyway, so to address this.
Call them prophets.
yeah, right. Right. to address that question, which is a good question, basically the center of all of these theories is this. If they're alive, claim they're dead. If they're dead, claim they're alive.
Mm.
It's true. Elvis is dead.
Do you think it's part of a disinformation campaign? Like the phrase conspiracy theory, Stephen, is actually a CIA term. Most Americans don't know this, that was invented to debunk the truth tellers and the people who are researching the real truth, like you and our show and elsewhere. And they use that to debunk people, actually, in the 1950s, after World War II. People were investigating, you know, the actual how the war was waged and then the Cold War, et cetera. So the CIA actually invented this term to discredit people. But I was posed that question two or three times. They said, be sure to ask the author about Lady Di faking her death. And every now and then, this has gained, you know, a little bit of traction out there in the information superhighway we call the Internet. I hear it every now and then. People really believe she's alive, and you're right. If they're dead, say they're alive, and vice versa. It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Elvis, just the people are still saying that Elvis was alive. And
right.
It makes for great press. It really does. If she's alive, I don't
have any tabloids.
What's that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
It said it sells the tabloid magazines too.
Sure. I mean, if she's alive, I haven't found any evidence to it. I mean, people can say lots of things. You know, everything that I write about has to be backed up somewhere. I can't write about, you know, my assumptions or any. So I would love it if she was alive. I would love it if Elvis was alive. I just can't find any information to prove it. Someday maybe they'll come out and they'll say, you know, howdy, I'm alive. And if that's the case, Vaughn, I'll crawl across the room, kiss your feet, and I'll take the first jet airplane out of the country. How's that?
Yeah.
They might be.
Awesome. Awesome. That would be amazing, Stephen. Right. people were pestering me today to ask that question, and I kind of thought about it too before. And I thought, I hear all these rumors, but tell folks how to learn more about Lady Diana and how to get your great book. I've got a copy of it. Everyone in America should buy it and get it. And the floor is yours, sir.
Okay. Well, my books are available in ebook and audiobook. And Kindle all the way around the world. So if you're in another country and you hear this, that's how you can get it. Physical books are going away, folks. If you want a physical book, I'll autograph it for you. I'll sign it to Santa Claus if you want. I don't care. go to my website. Go to whomurderedbooks.com. Whomurderedbooks.com. I think I have like 10 or 15 books of each of volume left. And when they're gone, they're gone. That's it. It's cheaper than Amazon. Get them there. I'll autograph them. And then I'm out of the physical book realm. Two reasons. I'm having supply issues. I'm having problems keeping them in stock. And when I do get them, the price that they're price gouging me. And I am not the person who's going to turn around and charge somebody $35 for a book. I'm not doing it. So the most cost-effective way for me to do this is going an ebook and audiobook as soon as these are gone, because I want the information out there. Okay? So go to whomurderedbooks.com. I have a handful left, and when they're gone, they're gone. And people say that, you know, Muhammad Ali was a resurrector of boxing. Well, I'll tell you what, if that's the case, then I'm the resurrector of books. Because my books are kick you in the face. You'll love these books. If you know somebody who, it's a cross-genre thing. So if you're into history or celebrity or suspense or mystery or anything like that, these books are for you. You'll love it. But I have one more book left and I'm done with it. So I hope I answered the question about her being alive. I would love it if she was alive. I don't think she is.
Yeah, wouldn't that be amazing? I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if these Q fantasy, those are real conspiracy theories about JFK Jr. They say Lady Di, those two, they say definitely are alive. But I'm with you until I see proof. I don't believe it. But these are great books, and they're great stocking stuffers, folks. The author Stephen O'Baney wrote Who Murdered Elvis, Who Murdered Diana, Who Murdered FDR, and what's the next book that you're working on?
The next book is going to be on Nikola Tesla, and I've got some information that I don't think anybody else has. So there's a lot of misconceptions about that. But we've been talking all this time. We haven't talked about what really happened to her. What really happened?
Yes, and now she was – this auto accident occurred in Paris, France, correct?
That's exactly right. How much time do we have left on the show? I want to make sure we have time to cover this.
We've got all the time we need, let's say 15 minutes tops. That should be
15
plenty
minutes tops? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I got a boogie on this. There's a lot of information to cover. So to solve this murder, I had to ask who hated the princess, who wanted her dead, why they wanted her dead, who cooperated in the cover-up, and who profited from it. Okay. So the story that everyone is told is that Dodie wanted to propose. They went back to the Ritz, and they got in the car, and they were being hounded by paparazzi, and the paparazzi interfered with the driver, and they crashed. Oh, wasn't that terrible on the 13th pillar? And that should be taken right out of history and put it in the library, right out of the history section and put right next to Grimm's Fairy Tales. It's completely untrue. Here's what really happened. Okay. They're on the yacht, all right? And I don't know if Dodie was going to pop the question or not. I think, again, it's a red herring. Because the more time we spend arguing about or debating about if these people are alive or if they're getting engaged or if they're pregnant, the less time I would love to be able to find a hard fact to say that she was alive. Love, love, love it. I haven't been able to, okay? So this is what happens the night of her death. Dodie wants to take her to dinner at her favorite restaurant, Chez Bonnet. And this is the night she died. This is August 31st, 1997, which seems like 1,000 years ago. And
yeah, exactly.
There are people who go, the carnies call them 24-hour people. Elvis used them. Other people use them. They're using security all the time. These are people who go to the destination ahead of time, check everything out, set everything up. So when the important people show up, everything's done. Okay. So the Alfieds are very important people. They have their own security team. They not only have their own personal security team, they also have their own security team at the Ritz. Okay. So they want to go to Chez Bonnet And my suspicion is they wanted to be alone. Maybe he was going to pop it to us, and I don't know. It's immaterial to the story. So 9:45, Doty's security team shows up and sees several suspicious people in the crowd, people who just don't fit. This is August. This is Paris. It's hotter than hell there. They're seeing people in long winter coats. They're seeing people with hats on, stocking hats. They just don't fit. It just doesn't make sense for these people to be there. Sounds familiar? The guy with the umbrella, the JFK assassination.
Yes.
If you look, and this is
the umbrella man of JFK assassination.
All of these suspicious, high-profile murders have commonalities. I call them threads of insanity, and I list them in the back of the book on Princess Diana. Elvis, JFK, Marilyn Monroe, Sonny Liston, they all have commonalities, all through them. I don't have time to go into it. Let's go back to the story. So, Chez Bonnet, they're not going to go there. The security team is telling them, okay, not happening. Turn around. We're going back to the Ritz. They turn around. They go back to the Ritz. The Royal couple go up to the Imperial Suite, which they are there frequently. Doty gets on the phone, calls his father, and tells his father, we're going to stay here tonight. There's too much going on. His father says, and this is Muhammad Al-Fayed is still alive, and this is what he said the conversation was. He said, it's so dangerous. There's so many people around. Stay there. Everything you need is right there. Hangs the phone up. Well, Henri Paul, the driver of the car, is a very interesting guy. He's head of security at the Ritz. And he's working for multiple secret services. He's working for MI6, being paid as an informant. I shouldn't be working. Being paid as an informant. Because a lot of high-profile people do stay there. And he's paid to spy on them and give these agencies intel. The CIA is working for multiple different agencies. He's an ear, okay? So...
Mm-hmm.
They tell him the night off, we're going to stay here, we don't need you. 20 minutes later, he comes back and says, hey, wait a minute, we've got a problem. The people who were at Chez Bonnet, those suspicious people, pictures of them in my book, those people are now in front, they're now in the lobby. You got to get the hell out of here. We don't know what they're going to do. They might blow the place up. We don't know. Now, what they knew is what no one else knew at the time. Princess Diana had been getting death threats. This is a real serious problem. This is why she was using a body double, okay? So they devised this plan. I'll go up front, I being Henri Paul, the driver. I'll go up front, and I'll put on a big show to all the paparazzi out front. Now, the security team for the Al-Fayeds, personally, and at the Ritz, they all know each other. They all know the paparazzi very well. This is not their first rodeo. They give the paparazzi tips as to where the VIPs are. The paparazzi take pictures. They sell them to the press. They give the people back a cut for giving them the tip. This is how this works, okay? So the paparazzi are not telling the people. They get paid to take pictures. So they're waiting for what they've always had, the cooperation with the security people. So here comes Henri Paul out the front door where all the limousines are and all the paparazzi is. And they said, they're going to be down in about 15 minutes. Oh, no, I think you said 10 minutes. I'm sorry, 10 minutes. They go out the back. They get in another car, and off they go. They had been told by one of their security people, they had security agencies, global security agencies, we secured a route for you. All you have to do is go down this way, go this way, go that way. No one will be on the road to be able to get the princess back to Doty's apartment on the other side of town and get her to safety. They get in the car. They realize immediately they've been set up. They get down the road just a little ways, and there are high-powered motorcycles all around the car, people dressed in black. And this car... it's not the usual car that they use. It doesn't have tinted windows so they can see the princess. They're trying to shoot the princess.
Mm-hmm.
So they're zigzagging through Paris, and this is where the high-speed chase comes. So there are multiple witnesses in my book. So when they go to the, and I list them and what they actually said, and they were ignored by the French authorities. So they go into the first tunnel, which is on the Riverside Expressway, and all these people, there's six of them here, I won't bother mentioning their names, they all gave testimony to the French police that dressed in black, massive motorcycles, and they're threatening the princess. They saw guns, they saw, so here's the driver, realizing now he's been set up, he's trying to outrun these motorcycles, it's not going to happen. Car's not going to outrun a motorcycle. The power to weight ratio was always on the bike. It's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time they come to the crash tunnel, Pontialma tunnel, the motorcycles are in front and they're slowing the car down. And this is kind of a plan because they're trying to get this white Fiat Uno to sideswipe this car. And they're doing this. This is called a pit maneuver. Cops are doing it now. They've been doing it in NASCAR for years. All you have to do is parallel the speed, nudge the back fender, and you spin the car out. That's what the
right.
Fiat was doing there. It was a planned pit maneuver, and only trained drivers know how to do it. So here we have this guy, who's desperately trying to keep the princess alive, and here's this pit maneuver, and he's weaving and can't get control of the car, smashes into the pillar, spins around, and the car disintegrates itself. It's incredible. And in the book, I tell you why. I answer the question that the Mercedes-Benz Corporation, the maker of the car, asked. Why is it that this car hit the pillar at a speed rating below the crash test rating and killed two people when it's not supposed to do that? We test our vehicle. They offered to inspect the vehicle independently three times. They were turned down every time. The only people who inspected that car were paid not to find anything.
Mm-hmm.
They take off in different directions. The motorbikes are gone. So by this time, the paparazzi's trying to figure out, hey, wait a minute, they're not here. Where are they? So now they're on their little mopeds. And they show up on the scene at the same time the police show up on the scene. And the police are adding two and two together and coming up with 148 and a half. And they take all of the paparazzi in. And they hold them for 30 hours until they realize these people haven't done anything. So now we have to find another somebody to lay this on. We have to find a goat. They do the same thing they did in the JFK assassination. They blame the dead guy.
Right.
And that's what they did. So without – it was – the toxicology report wasn't even back yet on Henri Paul. It was impossible for them to determine that he was quote-unquote drunk as a pig. It wasn't even back yet. And here we have the spoon-fed media out there telling the world this crash happened because of this drunk guy. He was not drunk. He was on film. All right? He was on closed-circuit TV walking around tying his shoes, and they're saying his blood alcohol content was sky-high, this, that, and that. It was impossible. It couldn't happen. It was impossible. So all of these high-profile murders have, like I say, threads of insanity. I don't have time to go through this because I'm pressed for time here, right? How much time we got?
We got plenty of time. I mean, we are – going to go into overtime tonight, so you take as long as you want to. But let's go for some more for sure. So just, you're on a roll, man, so the floor is yours. I love it.
A lot of information. You guys are going to love this book. This was 4,000 hours of writing, research, and publishing that went into this book. And I'll tell you what, I got one more book left in me, and I'll give this time investment one more time, and then that's it. I'm done. So I can't keep doing this, guys. It's killing me. it really is. It's brutal. I mean, it's really something else. So
yeah, I've written a book before, as you know. It's very time intensive, people, and you should be very thankful that Steve took the time and effort and money to get this information for you and get out there to the mass public. You know, fantastic
work. Thank you. It's somebody has to tell the truth. someone has to take the heat. Someone has to come along after decades when there's deathbed confessions who have been published, and there's, in the case of FDR, there was a document, a diary that was published by one of his cousins talking about how he was murdered. You know, decades and decades after, the truth starts to bleed out. And when no one's looking, I'm looking. So it's hard to be a truth teller sometimes. You take a lot of heat, and it's quite a time investment. So one more book left in me, guys. And then that's it. So back to this ridiculousness with the car. It's a Mercedes S280. And the French said that the speedometer was stuck at 121 miles an hour. The British said it was stuck at 144 miles an hour. Finally, in the press, you have to understand, this is a Mercedes-Benz. This is one of the finest automobiles in the world. The Mercedes-Benz
yes.
Corporation had to step up to the plate and say, hey, look, after a crash, the needle goes back to zero. You're both lying. And, of course, they didn't want that to come out, so they didn't want Mercedes-Benz poking around what's happened with this car. And here's why. This was not your ordinary Mercedes S280. On the pageant report, which is the investigative work that happened after the crash, it was their Warren Commission report. Pageant report was a government-sponsored damage control document done by the British, in the same way that the Warren Commission report was a government-controlled document or a damage control document done by the
Americans. Yes.
And as a matter of fact, in the book, I don't have time to get into it, the Warren Commission report was the pattern for the Paget report all the way down the line.
Hmm.
It was very, very obvious. And I'll get back to that in a second. But this car, upon investigation, in the pageant report on page 426, both the French and the British examination of the car showed there was no mechanical issues with the car. Not the case. The car was missing fuses. It was missing relays. The stored codes in the car's computer were showing that they had defective control units and control modules. This car was a mess. And here's why. This car on April 20th of 1997 was stolen and stripped. And it was put back together by, I don't know who put this thing back together, but it wasn't put back together right. And this thing just absolutely flew apart. So this is not your average car that you would put the most famous and most photographed woman on earth in. Is that up?
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave that up to you guys to figure out. She had to die at this moment in time because on September 17th, they were going to ink the final paperwork on the Intercontinental Landmine Ban. That was going to be the ink right there, the final ink into law. She had to die before that happened. So,
interesting.
Going on, I will get back to immediately after the crash. There's ignored evidence. The paparazzi.
I bet there was.
For sure. The paparazzi is taken in the strip search. All their film is gone. They destroyed it all. They took their cameras. They took everything. But some photographs leaked out, and they leaked out to two people, Lionel Chenault and Darren Lyons. Both of these people at 3 a.m. and at 1 a.m. had their photo labs burglarized. All of their cameras were taken, all their films, all their computer hard drives, everything. The only things that were taken because they had pictures of the crash, and they were in the process of vending them to the American tabloids. So now this is just a crash. Now let me ask you a question. When was the last time you were threatened for witnessing a car accident? Because there's an entire list of people in my book who gave testimony saying that they were threatened for witnessing a car accident. Makes no sense.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it, though. There's a lot of people that will be approached after these high-profile people, you know, get bumped off. And, you know, after the JFK hit, there were witnesses that were killed. And the statistics for that happening were, I think, a trillion to one for all the key witnesses killed, you know, being killed or murdered or died within 3 or 4 years of the JFK assassination. Same thing with Lady Di. A lot of people were threatened, and I heard that back in the day. Amazing.
Absolutely. And it's spot on, perfect. There was more ignored evidence. Like I said about that, about the letter she wrote in October of 1996. She wrote it and she gave it to her solicitor. Now, in their country, in England, lawyers are different. You have solicitors and you have barristers. Barristers study the law. Solicitors go to court. Here, lawyers do it all. They don't do it there. It's different. So Princess Diana's lawyer was her solicitor, Lord Michigan. He got her letter and kept it and gave it to Britain's chief policeman, Lord Condon. He held it for 3 years and gave it to his successor, Lord Stevens, who held it for another 3 years. So here's the pageant report going on, and they're withholding this key piece of evidence. And I don't care what country you're in, that is the very death of two people. These are three legally bound professionals concealing this document for 6 years. This is a criminal conspiracy by every definition in every country around the world. You don't even look any further. Here's one of the many conspiracies in this. So if these people can't find conspiracy in this, I say they're reality challenged. I mean, if you can't find this,
right.
I mean, a blind man could find this with a cane, okay?
Yes.
So I'm bypassing the slowest ambulance ride in history because we just don't have time to get into it. But
right.
There's a lot of moving parts in this book.
Tell folks again, Steve, how to get the book, if you could. There's always people that, you know, that tune in and tune out during the show. And let's get that out there again,
problem.
Your website and everything else. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the book is available on Kindle, ebook, audiobook, all the way around the world. Physical copies are going fast. They're on my website, whomurderedbooks.com, whomurderedbooks.com. When they're gone, they're gone. I'm not replenishing physical books. I'm not doing it anymore. I've had enough of being strong-armed by the supply chain. And COVID-19 has become their blanket excuse for everything in the world. You can't get books because of COVID. Well, COVID doesn't know anything about my books. I just can't imagine how that would work. But
right.
There's so many laws that are broken here on this, starting with the British Coroners Act of 1988. I have to know this because I'm a geek, okay? I'm a research geek. Coroners Act of 1988 states, here's a quote, "The inquest should be held as soon as practicable." So here's Princess Diana. I don't know, you know, she dies on August 31st, 1997. I don't know what their definition of soon as practicable is, but I'm willing to bet it wasn't 121 months. Which is 10 years, 1 month, and 3 days. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How long it took? It was 2004 before they investigated Princess Diana's death. Broke the law again. Again, here's another conspiracy against her. And it's on and on and on. So in this, the only reason the British government did this was to refute Mohammed Elfayed spent over $13 million investigating the crash, and he found evidence that no one was supposed to find. Kind of as a political buttress to what Dodi Elfayed's father, Mohammed Elfayed, had found, because they were a little worried that somehow the truth might actually leak out. And I believe that it did. There's a movie out there on YouTube. You can watch it. It's called Unlawful Killing, and it was produced by Mohammed Elfayed. Fantastic documentary. It's the truth, okay? The reason why they came out with the movie, the name of the movie, Unlawful Killing, just like the Warren Commission report, the same with the pageant report, they follow each other in lockstep. Both of these came out with the same basic conclusion. The conclusion of the pageant report was that Princess Diana and Dodi Elfayed died in a quote-unquote unlawful killing, which was their definition of manslaughter. But not one finger was lifted to find who was responsible or bring them to justice. Exact same thing happened to the Warren Commission report. Okay? It was later looked into by the House Senate Committee on Assassination, and it was determined that there was a second shooter. But again, it's amazing how these two parallel each other, all right? There wasn't one, not one finger was lifted to figure out who the second shooter was or bring him to justice. Amazing how the parallels just keep happening. I'll go through it in my
Yes, time. Exactly. Over and over and over again. Well, Steve, let's. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I know we could talk for hours about this, a very interesting subject, and I love your series, the Who Murdered Books series. Folks, again, go to whomurderedbooks.com, and we've been talking to Stephen Ubaney, a world-famous author on these books and these research on FDR, who killed Elvis, who killed Lady Diana, et cetera. And look, this is a I love a good mystery to sum it up. My favorite mystery is probably the JFK. I would say Lady Diana is up there in the top five. When that happened, everybody was spellbound. We saw the car wreckage. I knew as a kid that that was a hit. There's no way that happened. When I heard that motorcycles were involved, no, red flag, constant. But, Steve, I want to really thank you for coming on the Von Wehunt Show. We will have a fourth, fifth, and sixth time. This is three times a charm, my good friend. And what a wonderful book. Again, the book, folks, is Who Murdered Diana by author Stephen Ubaney. Stephen, what are your final thoughts about the book and the show tonight? And I want to thank you graciously for your time tonight, too.
I will come on your show anytime that you want. Anytime you want me to bore your people, I'll be back. The suspects in this book are
no,
the
I love this stuff.
And I want to run down the suspects.
Yeah, my audience loves this stuff. We have to mix it up once in a while. I always tell the audience, Steve, that we're a variety show. We'll do four or five shows. Kind of then I trip them up and I'll switch gears. I'm famous for doing that. So. I like to have some books on, some movies on, some other conjecture, you know. And this is right up our alley. This is perfect stuff.
Perfect. I'll run down the suspects quick, and then I'll get off. The royal family, the paparazzi, international arms brokers, the pharmaceutical industry, and the jilted lovers from both of these people. Why you would buy my book, because there's so many books out there. You're going to want to see the photos of Diana's body double in there. You're going to want to see the assassin's photos outside of the Ritz. I had these pictures. They were on closer circuit TV. You're going to want to see the meeting at the Bilderberg conference just before she died. There was a witness there who overheard everything. They were planning her death. You're going to want to hear that. And you're going to want to see the real photograph of Diana in the car in black and white, where she's upright and talking. The one you're seeing out there where she was killed in the crash, phony, absolutely phony. And there's another conspiracy for you, by the way. So with all of that,
wow.
It's a hell of a book. I hope you enjoy it and prepare your head to be exploded, because that's what I do best. Thanks, Bob.
I love
Thanks
it.
For having me on your show.
Steve, thanks so much for coming on the Von Wehunt Show. We appreciate you. Have a good night there in New York. Folks, once again, the book's called Who Murdered Diana. We've had the author, Stephen Ubaney. Stephen, have a great night, sir. We really appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Talk to you soon, Von. Good night, everybody.
You know, great. Thank you, sir. Wow. Not every day you have an author on the radio show, which is fantastic. In the chat room tonight, it's been very lively. We've had some conjecture, a little humor, some good comments about everything. And, yes, I've been looking at some of the last minute chats here. We had Cherie on, and I do remember her well, from Cyprus. I talk to her on Facebook every now and then. Cherie's really cool. And Cherie is also a beautiful blonde like Lady Diana. And, yes. So I'm glad that that she's on Telegram. Very interesting. You know, this book, folks, is amazing. I have read it, and you need to get this book. So, again, we can't thank the author enough for coming on board the show. We'll have a little bit of a break here and get your adult beverages. We will take calls momentarily from the radio audience. I can't wait to hear what you have to say. I'll be right back. That's the music of our ancestors. Wow, fantastic interview tonight, Royal Intrigue, Lady Di. And, yeah, being 25 years ago, it's out of some people's memories, but that's why I always say on this show we keep history alive. You've been listening to the Von Weekend Show. We are a weekly show, radio show nationwide, coast to coast and all over the world. We're in 15 countries. And 8% now of our listeners in Radio Land are in foreign countries. Pretty cool. 92% reside in America. So glad you're here tonight. Now let's hear from the Wolfman.
Yeah, I'm still the ghost of the most, babes. You know what I mean? I've been hanging out in this attic for like a long time here, you know, and it's getting pretty old. So I took a trip out in the world, and there's a lot of people burning stuff down and going crazy out there. But even being the ghost with the most like me, I got to have some kind of fun anyway. So I tune in to the Von We Hunt radio show because I know once I finally get my groove on, that's where I want to tune in the nighttime. It's the Von We Hunt show. He's almost as cool as I am.
It's a new promo. Well, from Wolfman Jack back in the day. Let's get to Paul the Gladiator, who's been chomping at the bit. Want to hear from him tonight at his North Phoenix compound. Hey, man, how's it going? How are you?
Good, man. What's going on?
Good, good. We've been talking about Lady Di and the royal hit and the intrigue with author Stephen Dobaney. Very, very cool stuff.
Yeah, I heard the whole thing, man. You know, and it kind of gets down to the fact of, you know, sometimes you can't blame some of these famous people if they did fake their own death. I hope they're on a nice island somewhere just living the rest of their days out and not being bothered
right.
anymore. 'Cause who could blame them all, you know?
Exactly. Like in the movie Office Space when Milton with the red swing line stapler – you know, he goes to the Mexican island or the one in the Caribbean. Yeah, you're right. I mean, they went through so much hell and back. If you're a celebrity, if you know, they have the means, money, and modus operandi around them to fake their own death and probably get away with it. I don't blame them one iota. You know, I'm with you on that.
Exactly. You know, I mean, look, if the United States government would fake the death of Adolf Hitler, then why wouldn't somebody famous
on
a daily basis, why wouldn't they fake their own death? As long as you don't profit on it, it's not a crime. So if you don't cash a life insurance policy, it's not a crime, you know. And,
that's right.
You know, not a lot of people know this, but no life insurance policy on Elvis Presley was ever cashed in. It's a fact, everybody.
That's because he was murdered, and if somebody cashed it in, they would have been, you know, an accomplice to murder, probably.
You know, so either he faked
his own
death,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, or he murdered him, one or the two, because nobody ever claimed the death policy, and there were multiple policies on him. One for Lisa Marie, one for his ex-wife Priscilla, one for his father, but nobody ever filed the claim. So I'd be interested to know if anybody ever filed a claim on Diana, you know, and other people who, you know, sometimes there's a question mark about them, you know. So
that's right.
I mean, you know, JFK Jr., nobody ever filed a claim on JFK Jr. Nobody ever filed that.
Isn't that amazing?
Potty was never found. Let me tell you, I hung out in Martha's Vineyard in Nantucket. The waters are not that deep around the island. You can find stuff. We used to walk out for literally like half a mile at low tide. It's not that far off of the shore, Massachusetts. We used to hang out. I used to lifeguard there in the summer times. It's not that far. You could find bodies. Let's put it that way. You know, you could find a plane and bodies. I mean, you know, I used to dive off a boat and fix fishing lines at Shark's Ledge. It's only sandbar sharks and sand tiger sharks and lemon sharks. They're not going to eat human bodies. So, you know, this whole claim, oh, there's sharks in the water, they're dead. No, not around the island. And you're not going to find great whites unless you go out to the trench and gulches. And that's deep, deep, far, far. I used to go out there tuna fishing on the charter boat as a second mate. So, yeah, the whole story, like, it all literally fails to be a reality story sometimes, you know. So,
yeah.
You never know. You know, let them.
It's interesting stuff, man. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, either let them rest in peace or let them hide in peace. Either way, give them peace, you know.
I love it.
Yeah.
And you brought up a great point, Paul, about the American government faking Adolf Hitler's death. We've talked about that when I was live at KFNX 1100 AM here in Phoenix. They had three or four shows with the historian Harry Cooper, who also wrote some books on that. I tell people, just in a nutshell, this is not conspiracy theory, because the FBI and CIA cables in the late 1940s, after World War II, which ended in 1945, had multiple sightings and reports, FBI cables coming from South America with agents on the ground. Yes, the FBI, though, is domestic. They also have international stations, et cetera. And our intelligentsia kept saying they saw Adolf Hitler in Argentina, other places. So why would they, if you're an agent, why would you risk your credibility? No, because in saying that Hitler was alive, if you believed in the BS that he died in that bunker, right? So these guys knew, and they were there on a mission to find him and locate him. And a lot of people, there's a lot of classified documents, folks, about World War II, well over 100,000 that have never been released to the American people. And they're not going to release them because it shows how at the end of that war there was a lot of shenanigans. They killed our government, I definitely believe, killed Patton with the OSS. They faked Hitler's death. It was all set up for a new world order with the Cold War igniting it and starting us off down that path. Crazy world that we live in.
You know, I watch on Sunday mornings, I watch Hunting Hitler on Defy Television. And it was funny because, you know, they brought up the story about Argentina and other South American countries. But then, you know, one thing that was said was, well, you know, the U.S. government showed these two body bags that they burned outside the bunker. Now, wait a minute. Why would you burn the body of Adolf Hitler and his girl Braun, Eva Braun? Why would you burn those two bodies and not show them off to the world? And why would they be inside of a body bag? Like, they'd be burning outside the body bag. So, I mean, it was just a show of, hey, we burned them, you know. He burned apparently all the Jews, so we burned him. Turnabout's fair play, right?
Right.
Like, wait a minute.
Right.
No.
Exactly.
Photographs of this guy dead. That's what I want to know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many things about that war that, you know, look, it's like the greatest Roman historian always said, that the victor writes the history of the war. The victors write all the history. And we've never gotten anything. And if you dare to get anything from the German perspective, oh, my God, how dare you, right? They don't want to hear anything from the German perspective, even the Japanese perspective. Now, we're glad that America won that war, but I'm not so sure we won it totally. That's a whole other show that we'll delve into about. We've talked about it before, Admiral Byrd's expedition to Antarctica and the Nazi base, and we're going to have a big show on that coming up too. But, yeah, Paul, it's just amazing, man. History is written by the victors, and that's the bottom line, you know, and a lot of truth is left out.
Well, you know, I think I don't know if you and I talked about this, but when I was watching Hunting Hitler, how in Paraguay there was this seaplane that was a German seaplane, and they had German seaplane parts in the lagoon that they found, and that this plane crashed with two men came out with bodyguards. There was like 20 people in the seaplane. One guy said that was definitely, he was a 10-year-old boy at the time, and his father was the mechanic who took the plane out of the lagoon and structurally fixed it, and his gift was a Nazi symbol life vest given to him by not Adolf Hitler, but his right-hand man, and I forgot his name. But the boy said, yeah, I saw the man with
Mengele.
The mustache. Mengele. Said, I saw the man with the man with the mustache tap the other man on the head or on the shoulder and said something, and that's when he handed that to my father. And then the guys that are doing the Hunting Hitler program said, do you have it? And the guy, through his translator, said, yeah, it's right over here. And he opened a drawer in his little, like, big case in his living room, pulled it out, and they looked at it, and they turned it over, and they saw the Nazi manufacturer symbol on it. How did that get all the way over to South America? You know?
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. You know, thousands and thousands of miles away. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, the offspring
across
of the Waffen SS live in South America. It's a known fact, and the Wehrmacht as well. And
well,
also,
the
South America is near the Antarctic base, you know?
Antarctica, yeah. And they had photos of Mengele with his South American name next to his photos from Germany, identical. And he lived out his years, and then they showed this really beautiful house with a waterfall beneath it, and then this terrain underneath with two tower, like, I want to say platforms built out of concrete, built out of the stone, with old chairs that were still, like, there, and there were bullet casings. And then the only way up to that house above where they would be stationed as lookouts was a long trek and this really German-looking fence made along the driveway that would go all the way around them and up. No one's getting through because it was mountainous cliffs all around.
Mm-hmm.
So no one would get through there, and they found the stomach medicine for the ulceric disease, the same German stomach medicine that Adolf Hitler was known to have taken, but they didn't find one bottle. They found hundreds of these bottles in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of the bottles. Hundreds of German Nazi-made stomach medicine for that specific stomach disease get all the way to South America in one house. With two lookout stations, gorgeous Bavarian house with Italian marble in it. And a guard station at the base of the drive all the way down the property, and the guard station is very German looking. Crazy.
That's right. And I want a fence like that around my Valhalla studio, the German fence. World War II style. They're those curved fences where they're almost impenetrable. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's very distinctive German architecture, very distinct. There's a reason why they curved it. So, you know, if you're trying to launch an offensive against that safe house, good luck. Because you got to get through that first, and you got to get through the German machine gun nests. And the landmines and the SS soldiers, good luck. You know, it's amazing. In the chat room, Lincoln brought up a good – and by the way, folks, if you're at home, go to the chat room. It's, you know, we're trying to build that up as well. You know, why did they throw Osama bin Laden's body in the ocean, which is also true, and never
exactly.
show his body to us? Another false flag. And I knew that was a red herring, too. See, I don't believe we ever got bin Laden under Obama. I think that was a big bunch of, you know, propaganda that was put out there. And Obama was either paid off or killed earlier, or he retired from the CIA. One of the three. He could be drinking cocktails right now in Tel Aviv or Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Who knows?
Yes. All he had to do was shave his beard, cut his hair. You would never know what he looked
like. Right.
That's true, because all they did was put a coffin over that ship in the ocean. Why wouldn't you bring him back to the United States, stuff him, and put him in a museum where people could throw tomatoes at the glass? You know? I mean,
or bring him back for trial.
Right. Or I was going to say, because it's not like he killed, you know, potentially the story is, he killed, you know, over 2,000 people in New York City. So why wouldn't you let New York City handle him live, put him on trial, and then do what you want with him? But you're telling me you took the time to shoot everybody in that house, and then you took the one body, put it in a coffin, and dumped it over the side of a ship? Bullshit. You basically gave him a Viking funeral. I mean, you're telling me that you showed him the respect of a Viking funeral?
They gave him the respect of a Viking funeral, a decorated Navy seaman. That's how they ship them out at sea when they die. They put them in the ocean.
You know,
that's right.
Don't give me that crap. Bullshit. You know, I call bullshit as soon as that would happen. You know?
I agree, but now we're getting somewhere, because if they were to bring him back and let New York, you know, pull him from limb to limb, see, that goes to the root and what we're famous for on this show, is I've always told you people that, and a lot of you believe this too, but, you know, you do your own research, but I don't believe 9/11 happened the way the media or the government ever told us. I believe it was an inside job. I believe it was concocted to bring about a new world order, a new currency. These things all take decades. These people have time on their hands, folks, and there's so many things that don't add up to 9/11. I mean, if you look at those buildings, they're like controlled demolition. So many witnesses said they saw guys go in there, pyrotechnic guys, you know, placing explosives, things of that nature. And also, if they had him on trial, he would spill the beans on the CIA, and he would tell the world how he was an American agent, possibly, and how he took money from the how he trained them, how he took American taxpayer money. Because don't forget, Osama bin Laden was at one time a CIA asset, right? Like a lot of these people. So he was on our payroll, you know, 20 years prior, and then they make him rogue, and they know too much, and they make him into a monster in our media. How this little bearded man, well, a tall man, very tall for his era, was in his cave and plotted world domination. And I used to laugh at that going, the guy could be dangerous, the guy could be a terrorist, but don't tell me this guy in this Afghan cave is going to take over the world. You know,
well,
I call it BS too when I see it, you know?
Don't forget, his father was the architectural designer and builder of all the oil sheiks' homes in all the OPEC nations. His father was a multi-billionaire, and he grew up a young man of wealth and taste, very highly educated,
right?
And, you know, driving Mercedes by the time he was 16. I mean, he wasn't a deprived fighter up in the Afghan mountains, you know, like they depicted him to be. He was very much the upper class in the Arab nations. And that's why when they tapped him to become an asset, and, you know, this the whole story just flies in the face of bullshit, you know.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, the whole story.
Hey, Paul, here's the funny thing. Let me introduce you. Osama bin Laden was at one point, he had a CIA career.
Right.
Is that effed up or what?
I know. Yeah,
crazy.
You got to take every story that we're told with a grain of 18 grains of salt.
Yes.
Because they're trying to sugarcoat. Just like, you know, you and I were originally saying when all of a sudden all these commercials for the vaccine, I'm like, yeah, just like the interview tonight, I'm like, man, they are selling this thing hard. They are paying celebrities to tell people to get this vax shot, which is not a vaccine, because, again, you can't vaccine the flu or the cold. You can only get flu shots, putting the flu in you. But this is all SM-102 cancer derivative from Cayman Chemical. You know, we went through that story five times in the show. But, you know, not a lot of people do their research. You know, they don't even, you know, 99.9% of people in the world, including Americans, don't even know what SM-102 is, where it's manufactured. They don't know the Rothschilds and the Carnegies and the Vanderbilts. They're
right.
All behind Cayman Chemical. Cayman Chemical gave SM-102 to all Moderna and Pfizer and AstraZeneca to make a quote-unquote vaccine. And we'll sell it to everybody. Don't worry about that. You manufacture this, and we'll get everybody to take it. So then all of the chemotherapy that we own and all the radiation therapy that we own and all the hospitals and the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, the Rothschilds, the Carnegies, right, the Vanderbilts,
right,
who are also the board of directors on the Fed Reserve, which is a private bank. And, you know, they're all just selling the story. Everybody's buying it. They're all buying it. They're all scooping it up.
I know, man. They're all buying it. They're all selling that story and that crap to the American people. And that's why you've got the Von Wiegand Show, my great smart callers, to correct this BS that's out there. And you got to think, folks, for yourself. And you really got to have common sense. And I've always told you, I wouldn't believe the media as far as I can throw them on 9/11, on JFK, Lady Diana. You name the crisis, whether it's the Ukraine or whatever, I don't believe anything. I mean, I will listen to it. Doesn't mean I believe it. I will deal with it. I may act on some intel after I've vetted it four or five different ways to Sunday. Then I know I'm dealing with factual information. But, you're right, Paul. We have terrible media in this country.
Terrible. And it was funny. I had a conversation with somebody today who was like, make sure to wear your mask and go get your shot. And I was like, hold on a second. Wait a minute. You just said go get my shot. You didn't say go get the vaccine. Oh, yeah, no, it's a vaccine. I go, no. Wait, hang on a second. Why would I want to get a shot for what? For the disease of COVID. I go, COVID's not a disease. COVID is the official word of the flu. Influenza is COVID. I'm like, you can't get a vaccination for influenza, for COVID. This is COVID number 19. Mm-hmm. COVID 1, COVID 2. Now, they did manipulate COVID in the Wuhan Viral Institute in the lab, and it got away from them. They admitted that they did it in the fall of 2019. They were pretty proud of stopping lungs from breathing from the bat COVIDs that they gathered in the bat caves of Wuhan in the southern province. But you can't vaccinate the flu. I'm like, they sold
right.
This thing like a Christmas present where the kids were running down to open the box and they found a bunch of needles and they all gave shots to one another. I mean, that's how well they sold this darn thing,
So true. Paul, we got to run, man. We're up against the clock. Have a great night, man, in your northern Phoenix compound. We'll talk again soon, my friend, okay?
Have a good night. Bye.
Thanks a lot. Good night, Paul. We are going to bring on the some extra callers here. The Irish Pirate will be up, and then Lincoln, and then the Gunslinger is going to end the show. Guys, we're up against the clock. You got 3 minutes to get your points ready. I promise you, next show, I'll give you a lot more air time. So let's go over to our Irish Pirate, who, by the way, gave me a fun pack today. And I want to thank you for that on the air. Thank you, Irish Pirate.
You're welcome. There's a lot more where that came from because you did have a lot of requests. As soon as I could get something that I was mixed up enough that it wasn't all the same band or anything, that's when I threw it at you. Unfortunately, there was so much there I couldn't even get you what I was working on.
You're awesome.
Well, Cacao Kelly actually has an idea for me that I was working on for her, and there's some songs I stumbled on there. One is from an 80s band, very famous for singing songs about things like I Wasn't Born to Follow and It's My Life, and there are some other songs in the background that are a lot more peppery than that one, and I stumbled into them. And I'm definitely going to tip you at least one of them because they really say
sure.
It like we want to tell it. So anyway, that made me excited. And had I had more room, emails, I think, are, 20 megs at a time. So that's my only limit as far as when I send you a pack. As soon as I got enough to fill up the 20 megs in an email with MP3 320s, that's usually when you get them.
Yes, I'm looking for more. I know I sent you a lot. I was very demanding last fall. I know it's the holidays. I gave you a lot of fun. I was very demanding for the studio. Where's my fun packs? Right.
I mixed it all up. I made sure you got some of it.
I knew you would get to
them
sooner or later. Yeah.
Well, and I think the hardest one is where you just said, somebody actually put out a vinyl rip and it had 13 straight songs from an album, and you just said, go get them. You weren't sure how you were going to pull those things up on your own. And the answer is that wasn't that hard for me. I figured out how I wanted to do those. And I'll be honest, you wanted 6 and 13 on that album, and number 14 I liked. I might turn around and work that one and send it to you anyway, because I liked the, what it was talking about. Anyway, I learned a couple of other things. I was just watching the InfoWars. They put out a DVD recently called COVID Land. Actually, it's several COVID Lands that they're making. COVID Land 1 was basically the scam. COVID Land 2 was the mask. And I was watching the front end of COVID Land 2, and my jaw was dropping. I knew, but I didn't realize. I have not used in any arguments so far. That when, let's say they want to euthanize an animal. So if they don't give it a shot and charge you for it, which is an interesting thought in and of its own, and they don't want to give you the animal a pill and charge you for it, which is another problem we need to look at. Then the next thing they do is they take the smaller animals, put them in a room, and very similar to, I don't know, idling a car in the garage in cold weather, you know, in, that type of thing. Dying of CO2 poisoning is what they do. You know, that they actually do that with smaller animals. And I thought, isn't that why they want to mask children? And that's basically what they're doing is, again, instead of putting them in a room, just make them put on a mask, and it'll euthanize them while they run around. It'll kill them slowly.
No doubt. That's
and
true.
And painlessly, for the most part.
God, crazy.
So that, I'm never going to let that slide by again. Yeah.
No, and don't. And what are your final thoughts to America here tonight after hearing great author Stephen Ubaney and Lady Diana?
Well, there are a lot of questions out there that we either need to say that we're going to have to dig it all up, or we're going to have to recognize it. Like he was saying, there's a pattern to all the deaths, and maybe we need to get that 35,000 foot view and stop worrying about individual stuff as much as, doesn't it seem to always be the same people doing it in conjunction with each other? They've just decided, let's control the world together. And we do have things like, you know, emails of people actually saying, well, we have to tell everybody that carbon taxes, you know, carbon whatever is real when it isn't. And so, unfortunately, I still don't believe that the COVID-19 virus is real. I do believe that they've had one. They cooked up in a lab. I don't think it escaped, though.
Good point.
There's no evidence that it ever escaped. So, but the problem is we fell for it hook, line, and sinker anyway. And so, again, we should just be saying, isn't this Pfizer, you know, the same company has been doing awful things for decades? You know, isn't this these people from these countries all took the same course, young world leaders from Klaus Schwab, and he's out there bragging now.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, you know, like 95% of all the countries' parliaments and whatnot just completely saturated with, you know, my work. And the answer is, well, when we find out, I guess we'll have to hang them all together.
Yeah,
destroy everybody else's livelihood. I mean, that's, I guess what you're asking us to do.
Irish pirates speak to the world.
If you're attacking us, I mean, that's basically what's happening now in Canada. The truckers all got together, and somebody's paying for the police to steal their diesel in the plastic bottles. And the neat thing is we also see some videos of the police returning them when they got caught and they didn't really have a reason to take it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what sometimes what you're going to have to do.
Irish, thank you, sir. Have a great night.
Always
we will talk more next week. I guarantee it.
Always staying on
and
guard.
And I look forward to our second and third fun pack. Go ahead, Matt.
Absolutely. Always staying on guard and always having a fun time doing it. That's exactly right. Simultaneously.
Yeah, right. Thank you, Irish. Appreciate it. Irish Pirate, Tech Wizard. And, we are going to take over the world. The Von Wien Show will take over the world. How about those apples? Let's now get to Lincoln and Flyover Country. Then we'll end the show with Gunslinger. I want to hear from everybody if we can get them on the air. Lincoln, how's it going tonight?
What's going on, brother? It was fun talking to you in your chat room.
Yeah. That telegram was a lot of good videos, a lot of good stuff. My God. Chock full. I was just scrolling and learning and laughing. Love it, man. But, I'm really glad that Cherie joined Telegram. and those groups. She's awesome out there in Cyprus. She is our white lady in distress, the damsel in distress in Cyprus, but she's hanging in there. I talk to her on Facebook a lot. We'll, like, chat real late at night when I can catch her live. But we got a few minutes here, man. Do you enjoy the show tonight? You had some good points in the chat room. I know that.
Well, as far as the whole Lady Di thing, I guess, you know, if you do the whole Q thing, then Lady Di is a transgender that's part of the Trump administration right now.
They say that, don't they?
Yeah, it's bizarre. But so is Elvis. You talked about him. He's part of it too, in JFK Jr. But your last caller mentioned the Rothschilds a few times. Do you know where that name came from as far as the Rothschilds?
Well, tell us. That's their name for that's the Jewish banking family out of Europe. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it is, but they changed their name to Rothschild. And the name Rothschild actually is a derivative of it's called the Red Star. And that's because the Weimar and whatnot, outside of every bank, there was a Red Star of David, the Jewish symbol outside of every bank. And that's where they came up with the name Rothschild to mean Red Star, which ironically, those
correct.
Same exact
yes.
people, that same ethnicity of people are also the ones who own literally every single vaccine company. So they own
That's
every
true.
Bank. They
yep.
own all the vaccine companies. Isn't that weird how that works?
You know, it's very weird how that works. And the Rothschilds, and there's other families in those Tier 1 families. They're very evil. They have been plotting their world domination. They're satanic. And people think, this is real stuff. If you start digging deep, folks, the Rothschild, these families, these are very powerful families. They only care about themselves. They will call themselves indirectly or directly Luciferians. Look who they hang out with. Known, they go to satanic parties. They're always, in the shadows. Yeah, exactly. These people are in the Bilderbergs. They're in secret societies that are demonic. They have a banking cartels. It was old man Rothschild. I always went to the old man who started it all. Well, the guy back in the day, he had 5 sons, and he sent them
yes.
to all the capitals of Europe. I'm sorry?
Yes, correct. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely
yeah.
correct. Absolutely
and he said,
correct.
You got to, one goes to London, one goes to Vienna, one goes to Copenhagen, one goes to Berlin, etc. And he goes, you're going to help each other. You're going to control this continent through money and usury and interest, and you're going to spread your central banking system to the New World, which is what they finally did in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act. And here
yep.
we are today. And so I keep telling people that the early American presidents like Washington or founding fathers, right, Thomas Jefferson, even fast forward a little bit to Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson was very violently against a central bank because they saw how the central bank strangled the people of Europe and made them and impoverished them, made them penniless. And they did not want that in America. And we fought wars against that. We don't want your effing central bank in the New World. And for 120 years, America was booming. We did just fine without a central bank. And they finally got it into America when they went to Jekyll Island. And they got Congress to vote on it on Christmas Eve when nobody was there and everybody was at home. That's how they do these things. They catch you off guard and they pass it. I'm surprised, now this is just me. I know it's all politics, but my thing is, I wish sometimes an American president would get up there and try to repeal the Federal Reserve Act. Well, they can't do that now because we're $30 trillion in debt, and that's the problem. But we'll talk more about that next week, Lincoln. thanks for calling the show, man. What are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts, man. Can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question for my final thought?
Absolutely.
Man, did you see today that Trump endorsed Vernon Jones for, like, the governor of Georgia, like, or whatever, the thing in Georgia? I want people to look up Vernon Jones. You know that Vernon Jones, you know, when he was became the CEO of DeKalb County in Georgia, that he literally fired every white employee he had, replaced them with black employees, and he got sued over it and had to, like, literally, like, pay out hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees. He actually lost these lawsuits, and it was proven that he fired every white employee he had, replaced them with blacks, and Trump is endorsing this guy? What's going on? It's clown world, man.
It's like, this is what I tell people. I agree with you. That's actually a truism. I like 2016 Trump when he was the bull in the china shop. I wish Trump well. I know they're listening in, but 2021 and 2022 Trump so far are not impressing me, is the best way I can put it. We wish him well. Look, at the end of the day, he's a politician. I think he's getting terrible advice lately on a lot of things. And I know he wants to come back, and he feels he's the heir apparent, and he very well may be. But, look, in the early monologue, I mentioned that the future is not Trump because of the things like that he did. And I mean that. I don't think the future trajectory, in other words, of the right wing is going to be Trumpism, because Trumpism was great in 2015, 2016, but it's morphed and metastasized into some weird stuff. I agree with you. And sometimes Trump, I always say, is his own worst enemy, you know? I wish him well. We need him to play for the economy, because Biden's going to wreck the economy. But I think that there's going to be a lot of brouhahas and situations, put it that way, in 2022 midterms and 2024. I think you'll see the knives come out on all kinds of fronts. It's going to be interesting to watch, man. Trump is already running for office for 2024. He's got a good shot at it. RNC seems to be backing him with their censoring of a few liberal congressmen on the Republican side. So, Trump needs to hone his message better and not support people that kill his base off, you know? I didn't see many minorities, and I'll be blunt, I did not see many minorities at the Trump 2016 rally. Saw a few, and a few are fine. You know, there's brown and black conservatives, but the vast majority, 90% I'd say or more, were white European descent. And that's a fact, because I didn't see at least 80%. I mean, we could argue all that all day, but I mean, yeah, sponsoring people that do those things. It's a weird story. I agree with you. I just chalk it up to he's getting somebody's telling him to do it, because he still thinks that the brown and black people are going to catapult him back to the Oval Office. And I think that is a fallacy. I've always said that, and I don't believe it's a good long-term strategy for Trump politically. But he thinks it is. I disagree. So his organization thinks it is, because they take all of us for granted. And you yourself said you're not going to vote for the guy, right?
No. Nope.
See? And your friends aren't going to vote for the guy. But they did vote for him in 2016. So I keep hearing that on the internet. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, like the old saying, you can bring a horse to water, you can tell it what to do, you can't make it drink. So I just think Trump's getting some erroneous political advice. He should go back to being Trump 2016 again. That's what I would tell him. Be the bull in the china shop. Be our fighter, and we'll love you and support you. If you do weird things along the way, you can only expect, like any politician, you're going to lose support. You're not God. You're not the Messiah. You know, there could be people that could challenge you. Things can, you know, politics is very fluid. Things can change on a dime, man. You know? It's a cutthroat business, right? But Lincoln, thanks, man. Appreciate it. We'll talk more next week, I guarantee it, and on Telegram. Okay?
Hey, good, man. Hey, you have a good night, brother. Hail victory.
You too. Hail victory, Lincoln. You take care, man. Yeah, we wish Trump well. I just wish he'd get better political advice is where I'm coming from. That's what you're hearing from me. He needs to craft and hone and tailor that message a little bit tighter, a little bit better. Let's get to the gunslinger to end out the show. If he's still there. Texas gunslinger,
yeah.
Are you awake? Are you at your post? Yes! He's there.
I'm ready.
Guns are blazing.
Guns ready. That's right. It's already locked and loaded. So, real quick, I'm going to be out of time. I'm going to put something in the chat room there, which is in there right now, that this is from the CDC. They're finally admitting that this vaccine is killing over 2 million people. This is from the CDC now.
Yes.
Let that soak in for a minute. It's killing more people than COVID did. The vaccine is killing more people than what COVID actually did. They're saying numbers.
I'm actually typing in your comment in the chat room so everyone can read it. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's
but you know
the
what?
Chat room there, but
it is believable on one hand because the CDC has been corrupt for many many decades, and especially with this COVID and vaccine mess.
I knew it from almost day one that numbers are not making sense. Numbers do not lie unless they're manipulated. Okay? True numbers do not lie. Okay? I'm a master electrician for 20 years. I know about numbers. Okay? So when you have numbers that don't lie, and then all of a sudden, you know, they come out now. Of course, they were lying in the front, you know, along with Dr. Quack, calling Dr. Quack Fossey. Okay, but when you see this now, what I mean, 2 million? My God, I mean, what the hell are they doing?
2 million Americans dead because of the vaccine.
Freaking believable.
That's our world.
I mean,
isn't our world crazy?
It is crazy, and it's when you got old Biden there, he's down to 38% approval rate. Okay. No wonder the truckers in Canada and the United States are starting to revolt. And I don't blame them. I'd like to be right there with them. If I was a trucker, it's one of these days, and it's going to have to be happening pretty soon, the American people are going to say, what part of no don't you understand? Okay? It's over.
That's right.
Now, if you want to go if you want to go any further, let's lock and load and let's rock and roll because that's where the ticking time bomb is ticking, tick 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 tick, to that point. They better shut their mouth. They better stop all these mandates when they're. I think they're lifting them quite a bit now. I think the Democrats are finally kind of seeing the light of day, saying, "Man, if we don't get lift these mandates and everything, they may come and string us up by the light pole." You know what I mean? Go ahead. Have a nice night.
Well, I would say we don't advocate that on my show or wish it, but historically it's happened many times.
History
is very brutal when people are oppressed, and you're right. Those things have happened before throughout history. It's all in the history books. You know? You know, on my show, no, you're right, Gunslinger. We don't wish any harm. And I always tell folks on my show, I've got the smartest listeners. We're not trying to overtake or they go, you know, these Democrats go, you're trying to overtake the government. Hell, we don't want your government. We're trying to overtake anything. We don't want it.
Yeah.
Right. We know, and I know by historical standards, that you're going to die on the vine because you have poison vine and poison fruit. I know you're going to implode on your own weight, on your own hubris, on your own $30 trillion national debt. All we're going to do is sit back and watch the show. We're not going to overtake. That's crazy talk. That's what I told people on this show. I'm not trying to – you don't have to do anything to any Democrat. They hear anything overt now. They go, oh, people are trying to take over the – we don't want your corrupt system. We'll have a new one someday after the old one implodes. I want a strong America. I want better leaders. We want everybody to be safe. But again, if they don't make some changes, they're going to look, they can expect these trucker strikes are already happening all over the world. They're going to just continue. They're going to get dug in, and somebody somewhere down the line, happens every time, is going to, and it's going to be the government. They're going to overplay their hand. In other words, they'll probably, oh, they could brandish weapons right now in Ottawa and start at gunpoint, arrest the truckers or shoot them or whatever. Tyrannical governments do that all the time throughout history. So I always tell people, because it's Canada or America or Europe, or look, I mean, just look at Australia and New Zealand, how draconian they have been in lockdown. The police over there are out of control. I see video after video of Australian police blatantly arresting people for nothing because you happen to be near them, proximity.
Yep.
So these governments like power, and they like to lord it over you, and there's always somebody somewhere in middle management that's going to push that button, right, and pull that trigger. And that's when all hell breaks loose.
That's right.
And that's what I'm afraid of, because we don't want that to happen. I don't want innocent people to be hurt. I don't want, because I always tell people, be careful what you wish for, because here's the deal about these kinds of situations. I looked at a lot of countries, researched them over the years. It's like South Africa is a great example. Once the bullets start flying, it's almost impossible to put those genies back in the bottle, okay?
Right.
Capiche?
Yep.
Once the bullets start flying, neither side wants to be the first to put up the guns because they don't want to appear weak, right? It's human nature, psychological. So once those bullets start going, that's what we see in South Africa. They've had 20, 30 years of civil unrest and, you know, attacks on white farms, people put out in the streets, white, black, and indifferent, killed by total strangers. You know, that's not good. We don't want that ever to happen in America. But I always say, or Canada, but I always say, God forbid if it ever does, because once those things start, they're almost impossible to contain. Look at the Bosnian War, okay?
Yep.
Ravaged the 1990s so bad that Clinton couldn't control it once the shooting starts. They sent in NATO troops. They got shot. How many mothers got letters in the mail that your son's dead? Okay? How many families were devastated on all sides? So I don't ever advocate that. We want peace. I always say our enemies are the ones that want war. And war is hell. We don't want it. But by God, if you're attacked out there, you know what to do. You got to defend yourself at some point, too. Can't just take it on the chin constantly and turn the other cheek crap, too. Doesn't work.
Yep.
Works in the short term. Doesn't work in the long term. And that's what happens. People in Canada have had enough turning the other cheek, looking the other way. At some point, people just, they get in position, and they say, to hell with it. And they get to that, Trudeau is at fault. He pushed them to that position. It's all his fault. Shows how bad of a leader he is. Shows how corrupt he is. He's terrible for Canada. And these people have had enough. And they want regime change in Canada. like I said early on in the show, they want him gone. And they will not leave Ottawa until he is gone out of the parliament, out of the presidential palace, until he's gone. And that's their current position. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens against Gensler, you know?
It's going to have to, you know, it's going to have to come to that point because, like I said, you know, when Trump was in there, he was not a weak leader. He you cannot do this in this type of world situation as we have it right now. This is why we're laughed at, because now we've got a weak leader. I'll using that word lightly, okay? And they take advantage of it. On anything, it could be self defense. It could be any of that stuff. You show weakness, well, to your adversary, well, you're gonna get your butt whooped. You know what I mean? And it's always been like that. So there you have it.
That's right.
You know.
Hey, thanks, Kinsinger. Have a great night, man. Appreciate you.
All right.
We'll talk to you next week. Well, we're in serious overtime tonight, but that's okay because the Von Wien Show is here to talk to everybody and give everybody some merit on every show. Well, we heard tonight from the world famous author Stephen Ubaney talking about his book Who Murdered Diana, and great book. Here's some funny quotes that came to me during the show. Was Lady Di bumped off because she was carrying Von Wiehunt's love child? Inquiring minds want to know. Well, possibly. That's my secret. Folks, we're glad you're here tonight. We will talk next week, as always. Next week's more of a free-for-all, more of our normal, regular show. And I wish you all a great week. God bless. Stay armed. Believe in your First and Second Amendments of the U.S. Constitution. We shall return next week in all our glory and splendor. Good night.
Feeble search to nothing, ready for some change, and you know why. Being a successful life is nothing. One thing that you keep in